Big show for you here today. Nate Tice joins me for the final Fantasy Film Room of the 2024 regular season. We have a lot to talk about in this show. Michael Penix is starting for the Atlanta Falcons. What does this mean for the Falcons in the long term? And what do you do with Drake London and Darnell Mooney in the last 2 weeks of the fantasy season? Then we get into some big discussions about some young players who have maybe made the leap or underwhelmed us this year and what it means for the rest of the regular season and maybe their dynasty outlook in future seasons. We talk Marvin Harrison Jr. We talk Jordan Addison and much more before we preview Thursday Night Football. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, December 19th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball, and join me to do just that is Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. I changed the poster out. Anyone watching on YouTube can see that. I think our discussion about my Vikings fandom, or rekindling it a little bit on Football 301 yesterday, I found an old poster of mine. You can't really see it.
There we go.
But it's Randy Moss, Jake Reed, and Chris Carter. Iconic poster in the Minnesota area around 1998. What do they call it? Three deep. And I think you could get it at your local Burger King back in the day. And every kid around my age had it. Mine's signed though. You can't actually, but like my dad gave it to me. He took terrible care of it, so you can barely see the signatures. But yeah, I just wanted to give that a little shout out there. Change up the posters a little bit.
Incredible. Yeah, I mean, I can make out now what that is. That it is Vikings related. So this is good stuff. Cool. Okay, now we're getting the full look.
Oh yeah, pan that camera up there. Oh yeah, there we go.
See, this is why you subscribe on YouTube right here.
I get to see my desolate office with stuff laying everywhere, memorabilia everywhere on the floor.
Behind the scenes of Nate Tice's lair.
They got a Honus Wagner rookie card back there.
Well, we are not going to spend the entire show breaking down what is and is not in Nate Tice's office. Again, that's the premium feed. You sign up for Yahoo Fantasy Plus, you get the behind the scenes look into everybody's shooting location. Okay, so that's the reason to sign up for that. Check corporate box. No, we're not going to be doing
that. Subscribe.
Yeah, make sure to subscribe. We're not going to be doing that. What we are going to be breaking down today for the final Fantasy Film Room of the 2024 regular season, because as I mentioned yesterday, we are going to have a little bit of an altered schedule for the holiday next week, and then of course it's week 17, so we'll be going back to probably like two shows a week in through the NFL playoffs. So this is the final Fantasy Film Room. The topic for the day is dynasty, kind of the big debates that might be coming in the offseason, some real pivot point players. We're going to look at some guys that have maybe overperformed, underperformed expectations this year, what that means for kind of the next couple of seasons. So that's the dynasty angle. And also we'll talk a little bit about their matchups coming up for week 16 and week 17, just what to expect in this final chapter of the season. But before we do that, Nate, in our first section here, got some pretty big news last night that the Atlanta Falcons are benching Kirk Cousins. They will be starting Michael Penix going forward. I think this deserves like a full scale breakdown because this is a pretty significant piece of news, not just for, I mean, the Falcons are a playoff contender. They're going to be playing on Sunday Night Football in week 17. That's a big game against the Commanders. It's a big NFL storyline. It's also a big fantasy storyline. I've gotten a ton of questions over the last, you know, few hours. What am I doing with Drake London now? What am I doing with Darnell Mooney coming off a stone zero against the damn Raiders? Anything, you know, affect the whole offensive ecosystem with Bijan Robinson? So let's sort of just kind of, what was your reaction to hearing the news last night?
It's not a great process from the Falcons, I don't think. It's a lot of resources committed to this room, the quarterback room. But I think just even looking at just this little snapshot of this last month, give or take, it needed to be done. Kirk Cousins was hindering the offense more than he was helping it, which was not why you signed Kirk Cousins. Even an older Kirk Cousins with an arm that's, you know, dropping to, I would even say, below average at this point in time. And now he can't move out of the pocket, which hinders, again, the entire offense when you're relying on bootlegs as part of this offense, as we've talked about before. That really just is going to kneecap you, where you have to be deadly efficient from the pocket on a team that is going to be run first anyways, you know, based on the offense coordinator's background and also the investments in Bijan Robinson and having Tyler Allgeier in that backfield as well. But it just kind of it couldn't be a complete unit with how Cousins is playing these days. Like he just can't operate how you have to operate. They even not even just passing game wise and not even just bootleg wise, they only could run certain runs because of Kirk Cousins' lack of mobility. Like they had to be in pistol all the time. They had to only be at, like, even if when they were in pistol, if he had to plant off his right leg to hand off to the left, he was barely getting there.
Yeah.
Which again is going to, it sounds like a minor thing, but it really hinders stuff. It can create bad operation. It can create it makes the running back maybe possibly slow down as he's getting the handoff, or that he just doesn't get it. And then he has to hesitate that half second. So I think all these dominoes that were falling because Cousins couldn't move, and it looked worse. Like I thought it would get better as he was coming away from the Achilles, but it just wasn't. And especially as more game planning got out there, you get put more out on tape. Defenses are just going, well, we don't have to worry about this. So we can just you watch the defensive ends play the Falcons. They just crash because they don't have to worry about Cousins booting around them. So I think it was necessary at this point in time. And again, the process isn't exactly what they idealistically planned. They were planning on Cousins being a good starter for at least 2 years and then going to Penix. But they had an emergency contingency plan that they have to get to a little earlier, I think, than they expected. So, but yeah, this is just, it was needed at this point in time for a team that wants to make the playoffs. That's why they took a quarterback at 8, is because they said, we don't expect to be picking in this area ever again. But I mean, they might be in the teens this year, which is kind of ironic with it. So I think it just because of the hindering that Cousins' lack of mobility was happening to the offense without the arm strength to kind of create room for error. It was just too much to overcome. And I think we just all saw it on Monday night. Like that is, that was the crystallized or dark crystallized version of what this offense is being, or at least the downsides of what this offense is right now.
It had to be done. And offensive limitations were the two things that I thought as soon as I saw the news as well. Yeah. And yeah, I'm glad that you brought up, like, it's not even just the passing game. He is struggling to like get to the perimeter to hand the damn ball off on some of these stretch outside zone runs that have been the base of this run game. I mean, just, he is so physically limited right now. It's funny because you mentioned that his, it just never really got better. It got worse. I would argue that his season kind of went like this. I'm on YouTube, you can see this. Like, it was as bad as it could be at the bottom, at the beginning of the year.
Yeah,
the first like probably
remember three, Steelers game
three yeah. Yeah, oh, the Steelers game after week one. It's funny. And like all those things ended up kind of coming back around, but like it started down here, and then maybe middle of the season it sort of went up a little bit, and then it just really crashed down in these last few weeks. But the other funny thing about that, Nate, is if you take out the, I know this is probably not great analysis, but I don't care, I'm going to do it anyways. If you take the two games out against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this year, week 5 and week 8, his full season numbers, Kirk Cousins, 2,723 passing yards, 10 touchdowns, 15 picks, 79.3 passer rating, 5.4 adjusted net yards per attempt. I mean, just that's beyond acceptable starting level, all those numbers, you know, especially when it's not somebody that's giving you any benefit from the run game or whatever. So, exactly. It did have to be done. It's funny because Kirk is uniquely still what he is now. Like, if you can just sit him in the pocket or sit him in shotgun, he can pick apart a Bucs defense. We kind of talked about this. That was yesterday. We talked about this where, the Bucs defense and their concerns, like Kirk Cousins is weirdly like perfectly still good enough to take advantage of those, but that's it. I mean, but literally that was the only defense that he could do that to this year. And it's beyond the point where he could start for this team going forward. Now, I mean, back to the Penix pick, in my opinion, I think the only way that it makes sense, and I'm not saying it was a good pick or that the process with the Falcons quarterback position this offseason was good. Okay. I'm not saying that. I think in my mind, the only reason that them taking him there, because Nate, I just don't buy like, oh, Kirk's going to start for 2 years and then we're going to throw in Michael Penix when he's 28 years old or whatever. And in a couple of years, I don't buy that. I don't buy that. It doesn't make sense. The only thing that makes sense to me is that, even before Raheem Morris and Zach Robinson and these guys were hired, ownership said to Terry Fontenot, we'll do something at quarterback, okay?
Yep.
So they paid out the nose for Kirk Cousins without really knowing what they were getting. And then they got him in the building, and then they this is not good. And they saw the quarterback that we've seen all year long, and then they go ahead and say, we got to start planning for the future right now, because the future is about to be now, and it is here in week 16 of the season.
Yeah, that was kind of my, like, well, I mean, shoot, I think all of us after the parents pick happened, we're all just like, okay, let's reset the brain. Okay, what just happened the last couple months? I mean, they got in trouble for tampering, the Falcons did, for you saying, hey, yeah, Cousins was shopping for a home weeks before free agency started.
Yeah. Yeah.
How the process is supposed to happen legally and officially is day one, you can start negotiating. We come in, we get the medicals. Okay. And then we go from there. You know, maybe we have a handshake deal, get the medicals, make sure that's good. And then we put ink to paper, or we have ink paper, have a void in there if the medical is bad, yada, yada, yada. But they just, to me, it seems like they just went, whoa, no, we're pot committed. This guy's our guy. I feel like they were that way in November. Before the season even ended. Hey, we're moving on from Arthur Smith and we're getting a new quarterback. That's what just, I mean, the whole team just fell apart that last month.
I mean, our buddy Charles McDonald's a Falcons fan, and he has been saying this during the Desmond Ridder era. He's like, I can't do this. Like, I'm not used to this, man. I had Matt Ryan for all these years, and, you know, it was Michael Vick before that. I'm not built for watching this level of quarterback play. And if you think freaking Charles McDonald's not built for it, you know who's really not built for it? The guy that owns the damn team.
And has said, hey, I want to win the championship before I die. So he is full steam ahead on this. And it's just funny. You just even parse the stats. Like, I mean, Ridder and Cousins have like the same success rate, dropback success rate and throwing success rate as last year, from last year to this year. The EPAs are a little different because Ridder had so many bad red zone turnovers. But it's just the, like, as far as just moving the ball, Ridder was just as efficient as Cousins was. And that's the second time in 2 weeks I've brought up Ridder comparisons. But I mean,
is your kid going to start crying again? Because he probably should.
God. I mean, the draft time. So, like, they showed the draft video after they made the Penix selection. Everybody was just in shock. And you could see Arthur Blank going up to Terry. And it looked like Arthur was very animated. And people were like, oh, man, he wasn't happy with the pick. And then it came out afterwards. Terry was like, oh, actually, we were looking to move back up and to take Dallas Turner. This team was, like, fully all in. But it's also they're trying to do two things at once. Yeah. Like, they're, and I appreciate, like, that's the one thing I want to say is, like, before, like, I could dog them so much, is, like, I appreciate them going, like, hey, it's the most important position. We want to have a plan there and contingency plans there. It's just a lot of the other aspects of this process haven't made a lot of sense. And Penix, like, even when they were like, hey, we're on the Packers plan, where we're going to have Jordan, you know, like the Jordan Love thing, that was taking a guy in the 20s, late 20s. And then also you were a team that was winning and a team that had made the playoffs. The Falcons haven't made the playoffs since 2017. Like, so it's just a lot of that stuff just didn't add up ideally. And it really feels like Terry is from that Saints line of thinking of make it up as we go.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it seems like they're doing. And again, this might work out. Like, Penix, I think, is going to be more exciting than Cousins. He's going to give, you know, I know we're going to get to him in a second, but this team is just how they've made everything out to be, even not even bringing Penix, who has medical concerns himself, didn't even bring him in for a top 30 visit. So it's just like a lot of like half measures throughout this. Hey, we're already committed to Cousins. Well, take a deep breath and make sure that's like the right move you want to make. It's an Achilles injury. And even before the season, you, me, Charles, we were trying to figure out the Jets and the Falcons and, you know, how is this going to work? And are these quarterbacks going to be there? We didn't have a lot of data points about 35 plus year old quarterbacks coming off an Achilles less than a year later. And I made the joke that my only data point is Kobe Bryant, and he fell off a cliff. And I know that's NBA basketball player and all that, but we have seen this is just so much to overcome, and they were pot committed to it. So it's a lot that I'm trying to parse through and trying to figure it out. But I want to see, I do think that they needed to go to Penix. How they got there before that is still just messy. And just also, like, are you all in, or are you building to the near future, the long future? Like, what are you building towards? Is it this year or the future? Like, that, because they're trying to do both at the same time. And usually when you do that, it's not good. It's usually leads to a lot of half measures that end up just falling out when it's all said and done.
It just always felt like one move was going to be a mistake. Either the Cousins move, either the Cousins signing or the Penix draft pick was going to be a mistake. We can firmly say, I think Cousins signing was a mistake. So now the question is the Penix pick going to end up being something that works out for them? Because, and again, it doesn't make it right. That doesn't make like the process good or whatever. But if Michael Penix comes in here and he plays well, nobody's going to give about the Kirk Cousins signing. I mean, this offseason, all the big brain football bros will be like, well, look at the dead cat, buddy. You know, the Denver Broncos do not care. Hey, we know the Denver Broncos fans do not care about the Russell Wilson dead cap, because they've got their quarterback in Bo Nix, and they've put together a pretty good team that's going to go to the playoffs, most likely, unless something completely changes here over the next few weeks. They're going to go to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Great. So again, like, what do we expect Penix to be, and can he approach something over the next few weeks? And again, we'll talk about this from a fantasy perspective specifically, but what do we think Penix looks like in this offense next few weeks here? I don't think they're going to end up making the playoffs, so really this is more of like a 16, 17, 18 kind of question. How does he gel with his receivers? What does he change the offense with him being under center? Just take it from there.
Yeah, he's going to chuck it. Like, that's the cool thing with Penix, is he's bombs away, and he's going to give Drake London a lot of chances at the ball, which I think is going to be, I think London and maybe Pitts, I don't want to get down the Pitts path too much, but I do think London, I'll put my name on London here,
sure,
is for sure going to get even more chances at the ball. Like, that's what Penix does. He's going to unpin that grenade and go, hey, go up and go get it. And London, it thrives in those situations. I freaking love Drake London. I'm just like loving watching him right now. And he's playing so confident and everything. The irony is that Penix, even though he ran a good 40, he's not a big mover. Like, he doesn't scramble much. He can avoid sacks because he gets rid of the ball quickly. I wish I had more pro tape on him, but we got to remember too, the Falcons benched him in the preseason because they said we saw enough. We don't want him to get hurt, which was another alarm bell that I think a lot of us were ringing at the time, but maybe, you know, it's tempered away over time. But I do think Penix is he's going to take aggressive chances. He's not a great thrower over the middle, like as far as timing wise. He always takes a little extra half hitch, which always kind of threw me off on some stuff. But man, he's got good arm strength. He's got a good sense of timing in his head. As far as when to get rid of the ball, he's got pretty good pocket movement as well. But I just think that there's going to be some turnovers with him. I will say that as he tries to take chances, but he's going to be aggressive. And I think there's not going to be a lot of those third down checkdowns like Cousins takes that Cousins is so known for. He's going to give his guys chances at the ball, which I think will be pretty exciting considering London and a little bit. I mean, I don't know. I think Darnell Mooney's probably pretty sad, because him and Cousins had just such great chemistry together. So not so much, I don't know how the secondary receivers will operate, but we got to remember at Washington, Penix was giving everybody chances at the ball. I just think London's skill set matches with Penix perfectly as far as what he wants to do and what London likes to do well as well.
I will say I was talking with your old co-host Robert Mays yesterday on the Athletic show about Darnell Mooney and his kind of what surprised me about his role in the Falcons offense this year is that basically the Falcons have really taken the old, like, if you look back to 2021 Darnell Mooney's route tree with the Bears, which was his best season in Chicago, it was a lot of like quick underneathy, you know, stuff. It was a lot of like slants and flats and screens and sort of those like quick hitting routes. They basically turned that route tree and flipped it on its head, where he's now running in Atlanta and they're moving him around the formation. Everybody in this offense gets chances from the slot, which has been pretty cool to see. Like when Drake London's in the slot, he gets peppered with targets, but still, like, Mooney's run 42.9% of his routes from the slot. Drake London's 38%. Kyle Pitts is like 39%. Ray McLeod, of course, is like 44%. So everybody gets slot chances, but Mooney runs these like big out routes, corner routes and things like that. And Cousins has thrown those well, weirdly enough. But I still feel like Penix is probably going to be a better option on those throws.
Yeah, no, that's a great call, actually. No, those were what Penix is best at. Like, corner routes are his best throw, and outbreakers as well. He wants to throw outside. And that was some of my hesitations with him, was that, like, all right, how are you over the middle? Because middle's when all the throwing over the middle stuff is how I kind of see timing and anticipation on some throws. He kind of has to see it. So, but he's best on kind of those. So the best routes he throws are like big overs, because he can see the guy running and then he can throw it over the top, and then outbreakers too, because then he can miss outside. Even his best throw in the preseason against the Dolphins, I believe, was an outbreaker that he threw too. So yeah, no, that's a great call. I didn't even think about that with Mooney. Mooney's just been fun to watch. Like, I've just been so pleasantly surprised by him. So that's a great call that his outbreakers are the best. I think I have some PTSD with Mooney when he was with the Bears. He was the reason a pick six happened because he ran the outbreaker short.
Oh, well,
so maybe that's why.
But that's classic Mooney. That is classic Mooney.
that was Mooney, and that's Bears Mooney, so that's always in my head with it. So, but Mooney's a little bit more polished with this. But no, Penix is good at these throws, so that's a great point to bring up, that maybe he does have some chemistry with that.
And same with London too. I mean, there's plenty of videos to people can check out about this. The reason I really like Drake London in this offense and with Kirk Cousins was the middle of the field throws. Yeah. That's really where we've seen him thrive. Like you being used as that big slot receiver moving around the formation. I mean, Drake was on this podcast earlier this year talking about those throws and those routes with Kirk Cousins, and that's been a big part of his game. But that is not the only part of Drake London's game. He's not really like a... I think he is kind of like a souped up version of Michael Pittman, where like Pittman can run those like in-breakers and stuff. But like some of the frustration with Pittman this year has been on the outside, the number throws, the more vertical routes. Like they're using him a lot more on those than the previous offense. It's like, I just don't really know if that's necessarily his game. Drake London, on the other hand, I go back to his 2023 reception profile, 88% success rate on out routes, 63.2% success rate on corner routes. So again, this is, there's a lot of overlap here where I think Penix can I'm sure he can still do some of the more like matriculate the offense throws. That is still the biggest question, is kind of that intermediate middle of the field portion for sure. But he can still access and elevate London and Mooney in other ways.
Yeah. And even if throwing on the move isn't Penix's game, it's available at least back for this offense. So that's actually I can't believe I'm doing this. Maybe actually where you do see some pits underneath stuff because it's more bootlegs. And more of those kind of quick, easy button kind of throws. So maybe that's another aspect that he unlocks, even though that's not the true strength of his game. But that it literally wasn't available. Yeah. Now they have that little piece of part of their menu back. And even if it's not something that you always want to order, at least they can order from it if they want, like getting a salad from McDonald's or something like that.
If you want to,
it's there.
I mean, the way I've looked at this and some of the hesitation I had about, you know, maybe a few weeks ago when people were like, let's just see Penix already. I'm like, you know, the thing is, Kirk is still has this from a just pure fantasy production standpoint, like has these guys at sort of like a baseline level. We saw last week against the Raiders, like that floor is gone now, I think, at this point, because he just continued to decline physically as the games went on. So like I think we are definitely introducing some more volatility to the Mooney stuff, to Drake London, but like there was already plenty of volatility. Darnell Mooney literally put you up a zero last week in fantasy. Drake London, he had the double move touchdown, but like from an expected points perspective, like 4.5 expected fantasy points just with the role that he had. Luckily, he made a great play. So if you played him, that's great. But still, I think that introducing the volatility is fine. I actually think there is a easy pathway for this to be good for these players. And just bottom line, they're playing the Giants in week 16.
Also a big point. Yes.
Also a big point here. So
that's huge.
I'm pretty confidently playing. And Rashad Bateman definitely made some big plays on those downfield routes against this Giants team. So some of these routes we're highlighting for London, for Mooney. Yep. I think these are, I think London is a locked in starter. If he's got him in fantasy, you're playing him this week. I've got him on a playoff team and I'm there, like, no question. I was probably going to play him anyways. What the hell are you going to do there? But like, I'm feeling a little bit better about it, even though I still understand there's some volatility here. Mooney, I think, will probably rank in somewhere like the wide receiver 2 range, maybe a little bit more boom bust even than Drake London. But I think we're laying out a path where this can be good for these two guys.
Yeah, volatility is the right word, but I think this offense needed it. The run game's good. Like, the run game is efficient and every week, and doesn't matter who's back there. I think Algier is like literally the most efficient running back in the league right now, and then Bijan, who's amazing. It's the same kind of discussion we've had about the Steelers. Like, they need explosive passes, and if Cousins is not providing that, then it's like, all right, well, this offense gets tight if the run game does get keyed in on. So that's what Penix is going to provide. At least some grenades are getting thrown.
And, I mean, lastly, for Penix himself, I mean, because I've got some questions about people, like, do they want to start him in Superflex? That's a little spicy to me. I think you got to be in a pretty tough spot.
If you need to,
I'll probably rank him in that like QB 21-ish, 22-ish. Would I rather play him than what I'm seeing from Caleb Williams right now? I mean, I think that's like kind of the same bucket of players, you know, like Bryce Young versus the Cardinals. I'd probably like to play him more than I'd like to I'm gonna maybe like to play Bryce more. So I don't know. It's just not one that I have like a bullish stance on.
Giants are out both their corners and I think their nickel, or at least they're hurt right now too. So that's another thing. And you know, Dexter Lawrence isn't in there. It's a pretty good setup for a rookie quarterback to go in this week against just a battered Giants defense right now. So it's not the worst setup for him. So I'm with you. I'd maybe take him. Yeah, I'll take him. I've totally forgot. Bears are like so dead.
Bears have the banged up Lions defense. So yeah,
in Chicago though, got the weather to deal with. I don't know. I'd rather almost go with I would go with Penix over Kale for sure. You're not going to get rushing out of him. That's another thing. Ignore the 40 time. His Penix's play style is pocket oriented, which is good in a lot of ways. You like a lot how his quarterback, how he throws and everything, but some of his creation will leave you wanting more. So rushing probably won't get a boost there. You aren't not going to, what does everyone call it now in fantasy world? The Konami code?
Yeah.
Quarterback rush. You're not going to get that with Penix. You might get a scramble, but it's not his game.
Well, I think we thoroughly broke that down. Let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll get into some of our dynasty players to watch next couple weeks into next season, right after this. All right, we're back. Nate, let's get into some of the dynasty debates that we're going to talk about here. Look, this is basically like, instead of trying to like predict or whatever, we're going to tell you which players are going to be some of the biggest dynasty debates this offseason. Again, we'll talk about them sort of in the lens of the next couple weeks, what to expect, because that's going to matter how these guys finish the season in terms of what we're debating them for next year and things like that. So we each picked about 4 to 5 kind of guys that have maybe underperformed, overperformed our expectations. We went sort of younger players, first, second year, maybe some third year guys in this as well. So I'm going to let you go first, buddy. Give me your first name here.
Oh, it's a combo. It's the Cardinals rookies, Marvin Harrison Jr. and Trey Benson. Apologies to Tip Ryman, their tight end. But that is who I had focused on for this exercise to start. We've had a lot of discussions about Marvin Harrison Jr. on this show. We talked about his role. We talked about a lot of the things. Did the Cardinals make a mistake not going with Malik Nabers or Brian Thomas Jr. or anything like that? I will say I just did a nice long study of Marvin Harrison Jr. He is very, very good. He is very, very polished. So the thing at the catch point, you know, ball is getting knocked away. Christian Gonzalez got him a couple times on that. That is something he has to work on. But as far as just route running, as far as like being a receiver and hands and just feel for all that, it's already advanced just like he was as a prospect. I'm seeing seeing tweets right now about how he's a poor route runner. And I feel like I'm going insane. but he is still this advanced version. This Cardinals offense is going to be run first under Drew Petzing. That's the design of the team. They're also their offensive line. While well coached and well does a lot of things well schematically, doesn't have the greatest players in the world up front. They have a really good left tackle. The center's okay. But the rest of that's meh. And I think that's been part of this, is they don't want to drop back a ton. They are a little scared to drop back deep. And I think that has kind of limited some of the passing stuff until they have to. And that's where you do see some cool stuff with some outbreakers with Marvin Harrison Jr. and all those things. They need to expand his role. And now this is going to be, I am not willing to go, hey, Petzing doesn't get it. They need to expand all the stuff we've talked about a million times until I see year two.
Yeah.
And then I really do think this Cardinals team, Cardinals franchise as a whole, is going to be very Steelers-like, where they bring guys along and then they slowly add layers to their offense, slowly add layers to their asks. Hey, you're just this role to start, and then we'll just start feeding you more and more and more. And I think that's my theory anyways. And just how they seem to go about things and being very well coached, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I'll talk about Benson in a second. But I think with Marvin Harrison Jr., they're trying to spoon feed him. And not because he can't handle it, but I think they just want, hey, you're going to be really good at this. And then we'll start adding the other layers. So I still want, that's why I think for the debate of this is that, like, if you have Marvin Harrison Jr. stock, hold on to it. Like, this guy is so good and so talented. I'm telling you guys, I know the production hasn't all been there, but his stats are actually starting to line up exactly like his dad's, his rookie year, which I think is so funny. But that's what he is. He's not this big freak ball winning dunker. He is a smooth slasher, finesse type receiver. So I think we have to we have to recalculate what we expect out of him. But I'm telling you, like watching him and studying him, I'm more impressed, and not just because I've been bullish on him, but more just like, okay, you're going to be fine. And I just want to see him in year two. So saying, if you have stock on him, hold it. If you can get him cheaper than you would expect, maybe start kind of start poking and prodding, maybe trying to get that, you know, maybe bait someone in that. And the same discussions too with Trey Benson. They're going to be a run first team. You almost have to look at this as like what the Lions did with Gibbs and Montgomery is kind of a lesser version of that, but they want two viable backs. They want it to be a 60-40 split down the road. I think with Benson, even in, during camp, they had him as the number three back because they were just, hey, learn protections and then we'll play you. And that's why they've eked him along. And then they started getting him some run. I think he got banged up last week, started getting him a little bit of run as they signed the extension for Connor. But that's because this is what I think Benson's role is going to just grow next year. And then maybe year three just overcomes it, or maybe midway through next year, it becomes more of a 50-50 split. But this is just the design of the team. Fantasy purposes, it stinks. I get that. And it can be frustrating, but this is how the Cardinals are being built. It looks like someone that's wasted way too much time watching the Cardinals this year. These are the theories that I have with these guys. So it's a big way for me to say kind of like hold the fort with these guys, even if it's not going to be always pretty week to week right now. I think year two will see the dividends being paid for how they're slowly bringing these guys along.
Yeah, Benson dealing with an injury right now. So, I mean, I think it will be interesting to track his second season. And if they add any competition into the backfield, you know, that will be something that I think tells you how they feel about what they've gotten from Trey Benson behind the scenes. So that's definitely going to be something to watch in the offseason. I mean, Harrison will definitely be a hotly debated player in the offseason. I think he already is. I'm with you that I think that most of the reason that his season feels like a huge letdown is not because, I mean, like it's a solid rookie season. I think both on film and statistically it's fine. It's just relative to the massive expectations that came with him, both in like the draft cycle, you know, the stupid generational prospect thing, and also just where he was drafted in fantasy this year was extremely aggressive, and he's definitely underperformed that. There's no question about that. So again, I think it's mostly he's a little bit of a victim of his own like high expectations here. I do like your point about like they're seeing what his role looks like in future seasons. And, you know, even you've been compared it to like the Steelers. And I mean, George Pickens was kind of this way where they basically just like tossed him out at vertical X receiver in year one. And his role has definitely expanded since then, put more on his plate in year two. And in year three, they really kind of have had him run a much more diverse route tree, certainly than what he did in year one. And I think they'll be interesting to see that with Harrison, because my read on the situation, you know, from talking to people and things like that, is just like, they wanted to see like, they thought they could throw him out there day one and he could hack it at X receiver. And I think he's not completely failed there, but the issues have been like at the catch point and things like that. And this is a very traditional offense that the one thing that I've been disappointed by really with the receiver usage is actually that I think Michael Wilson's a guy who probably could have played some X receiver for them and allowed them to move Harrison around. So hopefully we see more of that in his second season, because I definitely think like, from a dynasty perspective, he's going to end up getting dropped behind guys like certainly Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr., maybe even Ladd McConkey. That will be a big debate for people too. And I mean, I think all three of those guys have had better rookie seasons than him, but it's 1 year, you know, like we'll see what happens in his second season.
And even, you know, a stat I really like is success rate per route. Which is just, you know, a successful reception, you know, per route. Not so it could be a 5 yard gain on first down or something like that. And he holds up like perfectly well in those metrics. Like it's not like I think how you framed it, it's like, it hasn't been generational. It's been a solid rookie season. Like it hasn't been disappointing. I think it's only disappointing if you expected a Ja'Marr Chase rookie season out of this. And you also have to look at how those teams were built. You know, it was the Bengals that first year with Ja'Marr Chase. It's with his college quarterback who he's BFFs with, and they were pass first, second, and third down. While this team is going, no, we're pound, pound, pound. And I agree with you being that kind of traditional offense and putting Harrison Jr. at X. I think some of that, they should just watch a Colts film with how they use Marvin Harrison Sr. It was just that you don't have to just run digs and vertical routes there. Like you can run like speed outs, you can run like, you know, double moves off of there. And they've started to add some comebacks and outbreakers, but it's like, all right, can we add a little few more layers? But
can we get him to run a slant? That'd be nice. Like, just
a slant would be great, wouldn't it?
My one question here with you though is like, mm-hmm. just the Kyler Murray of it all. He's never going to be a Burrow type player, and like, no. but is Kyler even going to be the type of quarterback to like a Kirk Cousins, right? Where Justin Jefferson's historic rookie season, or like a Matthew Stafford. Like, I don't know that he's ever going to get into that tier. And like, I would imagine this franchise is pretty committed to Kyler for the long term.
Yeah, they are. And they definitely are. And Jonathan Gannon has done a lot to like kind of try to build confidence in Murray. I think Murray basically feels like a year two player all over again to me. Like they were kind of like asking him to do a lot of hard things, and I could tell it just doesn't click for him naturally. This guy's been in a shotgun his whole life running around, and now they're asking him to play from the pocket and make smart decisions. And I do think he is, but there are times where it's just, you want him to let some throws loose. And there's times when every time they want to double move something, I think I'm also with Kyler. I now know kind of what tier he is as a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, okay, you're in that kind of QB 9 to 14 range to me. You know, like, that's kind of where he's good, but he has limitations to some of his how he wants to throw and how he wants to operate. And I think they're trying to work that out. Like, this is what a lot with play callers and the quarterbacks is, they work out what their strengths and weaknesses are, the good ones anyways. So there are some limitations with Kyler, and I will say that, you know, some of these fade balls that Marvin Harrison Jr. are getting pretty frustrating when they only succeed on about 1 out of 10 of them. Yeah, not even 50-50 like at this point. Enough already. And I get why they do it, and they're not like the worst answers, but it's also like, oh, there's better answers than this. Like, and I think they'll find them. I really do. I trust this staff, but I did want to see a little bit more after their bye week, and it's kind of just been more of the same, which has been a little interesting. But that success rate per route stat, Marvin Harrison Jr. has the same route, same stat as Jalen Waddle. You know, like, he's better than Amari Cooper, DK Metcalf. Like, he's kind of middle of the pack right now. He's 45th out of 107 qualifying receivers. So it's like, those numbers is a little better than his yards per route, but mm-hmm. it's just to show like how they're hunting first downs and explosive plays with it. But I want some more nickel and dime. And I appreciate what they're trying to do, but get more out of your best players. And I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is one of their best players. And then Benson too. Benson's very explosive. I do want to say that. He's getting better. He's getting better feel. Explosive. I just don't want to give him a mention before we move on.
No, for sure. And last two games for Arizona, Panthers this week, Rams in week 17. There's some secondary matchups that we'll see if Harrison can take advantage of. And I think at this point, you kind of know what you expect from Harrison the rest of the season, from like a fantasy perspective. And Dynasty, I mean, I still think he's like a top 10 Dynasty receiver. And probably would I just prefer Brian Thomas Jr. straight up right now, just because like I've seen it and like he's, you know, he's got Trevor Lawrence coming back next year, probably. But still, I'm not going to go too crazy. And I think I actually like your take about him maybe being a nice buy low if the person got really frustrated with him in the offseason. My first one I'm going to throw to is Jordan Addison, because we touched on him actually a little bit yesterday on Football 301, Nate, where, I mean, this guy's really taken me by surprise in like the last month. At the beginning of the year, you know, he wasn't really, this is classic receiver production, right? It's always little pockets of it. I mean, I keep referencing the Jerry Jeudy thing, who's one of the five receivers over 1,000 yards this year, and he was 44th in receiving yards in weeks 1 to 8. Like, this is how receiver production goes, especially when you're paired with an aggressive quarterback who will let it rip. Jameis is definitely that guy. Sam Darnold is absolutely a better, at least certainly in this offense, a better version of that player. But it's definitely snuck up on me, the Jordan Addison production of late. And I would kind of, again, I said this to you yesterday, I've always been a little bit, not low on him, but just kind of like, I think lukewarm was the phrase you used yesterday. Yeah. That's sort of how I've felt about Addison. But he's been so productive in the last month. And I think really part of the reason that this offense has gone to, I think, an even greater level than where we started at the beginning of the season, Hockenson being healthy and Addison sort of emerging as a one-on-one answer against zone coverage. What do we expect the ceiling of a player like this to be? Because I definitely think for people in their fantasy football playoffs, like, I want you to start Jordan Addison against the Seahawks, against the Packers in week 16, week 17, especially the Packers, who are pretty zone heavy. Seahawks mm-hmm. have issues out at the outside corner, but I'm more so interested in like, what is the future and what is the ceiling of a player like this?
it's going to look like this, where this little stretch, I mean, obviously these are the highest of the highs. He's always going to get constant production because every defense that plays the Vikings is going to worry about number 18. They're Addison could be as good as could be. They're all going to go, well, where's number 18 at? And where's Justin Jefferson at? Where's, okay, we got to roll over the top. You have to pick your poison as a defense. So I think the opportunities are going to always be there unless they play some crazy defense that only the Vikings actually do. So unless they have inter-squad scrimmages for the Super Bowl, you know, like they don't have to worry about it, which is like zero double, you know, where they double team the top two guys. The Chiefs do this as well. Guess what? Chiefs are in the AFC. So unless you play the Chiefs or unless they play themselves, Addison's going to get touches. Like it just is. This is the design of the offense. Like so many safeties are skewed over the top of Jefferson that Addison's always going to get opportunity. Is it always going to be the 140 yards, two touchdown type of stuff? No, but he's going to get 5 to 6 targets a game because it's just the math of what this offense gets every single week. Like he's always going to be a beneficiary of this. It really reminds me too of old Vikings pairing of Moss and Nate Burleson. Nate was a great zone beater in the same way. And then they had a tight end at that time, Jermaine Wiggins, who like they were just able to attack underneath because everyone was scared of Moss. So like Addison, this is year two of him and he's a very polished player. Like he's such a kind of a mind as a player. him and Devontae Smith.
I hear you.
Because they're real receivers, but they're tiny. So it's just, he won the freaking Biletnikoff. And it's like, if you ever watch that Pitt tape with Addison, it's so much fun. I mean, he got Kenny Pickett drafted in the first round. They would literally run trips formations into the boundary just to give Addison isolated looks all by himself, just all to the field because he could run a full route tree. And so him and Jefferson have similar skill sets. So he's a true Z. He's not just a burner. So they know that as well. Even though he's gotten some deeper stuff, it was off double moves where they love this little, it's great coaching. It's great schematic stuff. They love running double moves to one side with Addison. Like he'll run like a stop and go because they know the safety's kicked all the way over to Jefferson side. So the quarterback, Darnold, will look Jefferson, make sure, you know, the safety's over there. And Addison's got all the time in the world because he knows he's the second read and they know that the safety's over there. And so that's why it just keeps happening, like because defenses are going to give it to him. So it's a long-winded way to say that like he's going to always have steady production as long as he's healthy. The big thing for him is health because he's tinier. It's just going to be a physics thing. But man, I've been very impressed. Like he's winning one-on-ones. There's not a lot of teams that have a number two corner that can keep up with him. You know, a team has to have a very specific game plan to maybe go, all right, we'll have our number two corner and double team Jefferson, and then we'll put our number one corner on Addison. Not a lot of teams do that. So again, the natural answers are always going to be there. Okay, usually they're going to get a lot of cover two, cover six. You brought up the zone stats. Addison's going to eat that up. So it's like there's always going to be that steady production with some real spike weeks, depending on like if they hit on a couple of these like they did recently, like against the Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, the defensive kind of game plan that you laid out there, that's like the old Bill Belichick thing where he would your number two receiver and then just line up like ISO one coverage on your number one, or, you know, vice versa, whatever. But anyways, not a lot of teams do that. Like the Lions at times have done that to Justin Jefferson where they've played like hard doubles on him and then just manned up everybody else. And that's where I think and this is going to take like an off season of investigating here for me. Has Addison taken a step in beating man coverage? And does that put him in? Because that to me would be what puts him in the like Devontae Smith tier or the Jalen Waddles, you know, the typical like this guy's a two, but he's a great two, as opposed to just like, I think in his rookie season, he was a fine two. And again, to put a point on this about like you said like steady production. I think he's going to be one of these guys like steady year-long production, but I think week to week, it could be very, very boom bust. Since week 12, Nate, he's fourth in the NFL in receiving yards. Would you like to guess where he was in weeks 1 to 11?
40th.
78th.
Trust me,
behind Josh Palmer, Jake Ferguson, DeMarcus Robinson, Christian Kirk, Ray McLeod. Like, these are the guys that had more receiving yards than Jordan Addison in the first. And I know he did miss, I think he has a couple injuries and things but still, like, yeah, I mean, even just if you look at the per game numbers, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games under 50 yards in that stretch of time. So it wasn't as if he was being elevated early on in the year. And it's also worth remembering, from a dynasty perspective, he's going to have a new quarterback next year. JJ McCarthy most likely is going to be starting for this team. That's another new variable. So really, I do think rest of the season, definitely I'm starting him. I'm kind of buying into this recent surge in production. The next few years, I think that's going to take a, like, I definitely think his, in terms of how I view him in Dynasty, like, the second I finish kind of charting him, I'll be like, oh, I'm either going to keep him in this, like, kind of boom-busty range, or maybe he launches up into my third tier of receivers.
Yeah, that third tier receivers kind of sounds right. Like, I mean, last, is this post their bye week? I'm just trying to do the math here. Yeah, so, like, the last, like, month, basically once they start in November, is kind of, like, how the production is, I feel like, is going to look. So it's been, like, yeah, so it's been, like, against the Colts. 5 targets for 42 yards. Okay. Next week, 5 targets for 25 yards, 8 targets for 61 yards, like, but with a touchdown too. He's also going to get touchdown chances more than, because they, again, everybody's keyed in on Justin Jefferson and Kevin O'Connell's really good at the red zone designs. That's another thing that I think is more interesting about Addison as well, and creates those spike weeks as well. Even if he doesn't have a bunch of the catches and stuff, he'll get touchdown opportunities in the red zone. And you brought up the yesterday, and it was like, literally, I watched it later and I was like, oh, there's another one. The outbreakers, they're adding more of those routes, it feels like, into his kind of repertoire. And that's been really kind of cool to see, because Darnold's been letting those rip.
Yeah.
And I think McCarthy will let those rip too, if he was in there. And bring it up, just bring him, ties down. You know, Marvin Harrison Jr., 45th in success rate per route. Addison, 42nd. Kind of the same tier. So, you know, yeah, it's a breakout year for one guy. It's a disappointing year for another guy. That's how it goes.
Perception. That's what, all that's about, what expectations. All about. Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Okay, give me another one from your list.
Oh, another one from my list. I feel like I can just caricature myself. We're going to go with, actually, we'll, yeah, caricature. We're going to go full caricature. Jalen Polk. Just a very, very disappointing player for me. This one could be quick. Jeez,
yeah.
Still want to do a little more studying on this, but I've watched a decent amount because I really, really enjoy watching Drake May. So that whole success rate per route, Jalen Polk is 105th out of 107. God, I think he's lowest in yards per route run, 0.36. I believe that's lowest. First downs per route, yep, he's near the bottom. Explosive route, yep, near the bottom. I think he's bottom five in basically every metric that I look at.
I mean, 0.3 like yards per route run is ridiculous.
Dude, it's terrible. And we've had theories on this, and I think some of them are pretty true here, about as far as the role isn't great for him, as far as how they're trying to use him. If I have to see Kayshon Booty run one more vertical route, I'm going to drive to Foxborough myself and just go, what are you guys doing? Like, yeah. Why do you keep running this slow, fat receiver that doesn't run routes 50 yards down the field? He's chubby. And Drake May gives him chances, and it annoys the hell out of me. It's like, no, this guy doesn't even finish his routes. What are we doing here? And then Jalen Polk, who him and May, right, seem like BFF in the camp, and they seem like in preseason, they seemed early, even kind of early in the season, early May starts, he was giving him chances. They're giving him designed routes, like giving him chances near the red zone where they're like, hey, we're going to get you this touchdown here. Remember the game in Europe where he slips? It's been just confidence with him. This is, and we have talked about this, but I just want to reiterate, is that this is not the player he was in college. He was an uber talent, not talented, uber, he was talented, but uber confident, uber competitive player that any 50-50 ball he wanted to win and dunk on a guy and take the ball away. He was grinding guys as a blocker. I've seen him pancake a linebacker in college because he was going after him so hard. I don't see any of that. I see him hesitating before he blocks a guy. And that, to me, tells me that he's going, is this the guy I'm supposed to block? So to me, that's a mental thing. And the draw, he hit a great catch against the 49ers that gets overturned. He has a touchdown in the back of the end zone against as early in the year, foot half inch out of bounds. Or no, you got the one toe tap in, and then they ruled it out of bounds upon a review. Every time he was about to maybe break through and get some confidence, something kind of just takes him away, you know, takes away that he can build upon that. They've been moving in guys in and out of the lineup at receiver. I think it's a mess receiving coaching wise there. Again, why are you giving Booty so many touches there? But it's just, I'm not all the way out, because it's just for receivers, especially, it's, you know, receivers classically and just prospects classic, it's not till year three. You know, that's what you want to say. I need to see a little bit more before I'm going like, oh yeah, don't worry, this is just a weird rookie season and all that. This is concerning. Obviously, the underlying stats are very concerning for me. There's going to be debate on it. I would still, if you didn't, I have too much Jalen Polk stock, but if you maybe can buy him super low, yeah, I'm fine for it, because I don't think it's a terrible dart throw. I never thought he would be a high-end one or a one in offense. I always thought he would be a good number two in an offense, like a high-end, safe number two. Kind of like what we were talking about with Addison. Not that, maybe not to that extent, but just safe zone beater that can do a lot of the dirty work stuff. So this is terrible. Don't get me wrong, anybody listening to this. But it's just the tape has not shown. It just shows a player not playing with any confidence or any trust in what he's doing on a play-to-play basis, which is not what he was in college. So, yeah, a nice rookie wall. I haven't seen one of these in a while, and he hit that rookie wall hard.
Oh, man. Yeah, one of the most disappointing things this year for me has been Jalen Polk, because people hated that pick, and I was like, no, this is actually pretty good. It's been really, really bad. So definitely looks like I've got that one wrong. But I agree with you that it's the lack of confidence, I think, in what he's being asked to do, and then just steeps into lack of confidence in his hands, his blocking, the things he did really well as a college player. Yeah. Super unfortunate. I'm with you that I'm not going to say I have a, I usually say I have the candle lit for like Rashad Bateman. Okay, that's different. I'm not saying I have a candle lit for Jalen Polk, but I'll like maybe keep like a page earmarked in the book for Jalen Polk. You know, like I'm willing to go back to it if there's more evidence of it. I mean, since week 11, he has one catch for 7 yards. So it's just there's not a lot there. There's not a lot to go on there right now. Do you think maybe a new offensive coordinator could be on the table for the New England Patriots? We'll see about that. You know, there's like people trying to lip read the crafts up in their box saying like the play calling stinks. I don't know. We'll see. But my worry with that also can be, I come back to like the Jonathan Mingo example for Jalen Polk, although I think that I like Polk better as a prospect than Mingo. And definitely like for sure. Yeah. I had Polk a tier higher than a guy like Mingo, but Mingo is like, sure, I could see him working as like a big slot receiver sort of in that regard. And then the Panthers in year one just threw him into like a traditional Z receiver role outside. And like, there was no evidence on his film that was ever going to work. There's no evidence on Jalen Polk's film that he was ever going to be like a high end X receiver, but that's basically what they asked him to do right away. And it's been to start the year, it was about as bad as it could get. And then they just kind of stopped playing him. When they've played him, they have used him in like more off the line slot type stuff, but I don't know. So we'll see if that can be like a new play caller comes in and you just wash out with that guy. So who knows?
If they sign a big guy, you know, they reconfigure the whole room and that kind of like help gives them a chance. Yeah. But I could tell you there's a play against the Colts. They put him in there. I could tell it was a key block. They motioned him in. Hey, this is a huge block for you. He just gets steamrolled. And I don't think he played much after that. But that's the thing, is like, those are the chances you get as a young guy if you're not a top 10 pick. Like, hey, you got to do this stuff. And that's why I think it's so disappointing for me, you, and probably the Patriots staff is going, what the hell? This is what you were awesome at. Not even just good, awesome at as a prospect. And now you can't even be average. Yeah, that's just the disconnect going on with him right now. So just not fun.
not fun at all. I've got at least two more from my list I want to get to. Let's start with Jaxon Smith-Njigba here, because clearly been a huge hit this year. I liked him a lot as a draft pick this year. He's wide receiver 7 on the season. He's taken a big step in the back half of the year. He's been their most important offensive skill position player. Zach Charbonnet has been giving them stuff. But certainly, like in the back half of the year, JSN, I think, has been their most important skill position player. He's been a big answer for them against pressure. Obviously, rest of season, it's just we are we getting Geno or are we getting Sam Howell? Like that is the analysis. JSN's been such a good pick for some of my teams that like if even if Hal's out there, I'm probably going to have to go down with the ship on this one, but I don't want to. And it's only because I've got to start like multiple flex players, and it is what it is. For other people out there, yeah, I'd probably rather start other folks if Sam Howell is going to be behind center against the damn Vikings this week. You know, like that's tough. But I think the more important question is, we know JSN is good now. I think that was a an outstanding question after his rookie year. And like you've said this before, it takes like 20 starts. It takes at least like halfway through their second season to really get a good handle on the player. I think we know now he's good. I thought his rookie year was fine. I thought his early season film was fine too. But now I think he's been legit, really like a needle mover in the back half.
Yep.
And more akin to the prospect I thought he would be. This play that we're seeing right now is what I thought he'd be as a prospect. So I guess the question then is, going forward, like how high can he fly?
Oh, this is kind of like what I see as his ideal usage and version. So I think this is more real than anything we've seen previously, as far as like the last month or everything. Ever since their bye week, the Seahawks have been totally reformed after the bye week. I'm with you though, real quick, and the rest of the season, the Howell stuff totally scares me, because Howell is a boom bust quarterback all the way. I call him the three true outcomes quarterback, which is just it's sack, scramble, explosive play for the offense or defense.
Like, for real.
The ball does not hit the ground in a good or bad way. It's that, but JSN is more of a methodical receiver. DK Metcalf is the, and even Lockett are kind of the boom bust maybe receivers that I picture Howell kind of pairing with. So that's where a little concerning. I'm with you on that for the rest of the season, but I do think that their usage of him going with, okay, yeah, he's going to be a slot guy for most of his career. Like, that's where he's going to make a lot of his work. Now he's getting so much production on the outside, and they're asking him to do real things outside of just like underneath routes, to running more intermediate routes. And again, this is anecdotal. I know, I'm sure you have numbers on this, but it feels more that I always hate doing that, because I know you could just go, all right, and look. But it just feels like they're expanding his role in this last month or so to be more of a full route tree. He's never going to be a burner, but the fact that he can get maybe those, I'm catching the ball at 12 to 15 yards as opposed to 4 to 5 yards, those add up. So I think this is very real as long as Geno's back there. I'm a little concerned too, because the Seahawks center might be out a little while, teamy, and that is very concerning. So that with Howell, that is like that recipe for disaster that could be happening. And they're going against freaking Brian Flores. Oh,
I know.
This is just a lot of scariness for the Seahawks the rest of the way. But as JSN, as a player, for fantasy purposes, I think this is very, very real. I'm with you. We're saying that this is what I was expecting him as a prospect. Never think he's going to be that true alpha elite guy, but he's a guy that deserves targets, can eat targets, and be very successful with those targets. I mean, his underlying numbers are really good too. Like, I think the perfect way to kind of encapsulate him is, yeah, he's not going to break 2 yards per route run. He's at 1.89, but he's 26th in successful routes per route run. Oh, God, successful catches per route run. Like, he's up there. He's like the same numbers as Brian Thomas Jr. right now, but Cooper Kupp and him have the same kind of success. And that's kind of how I picture him, kind of Cooper Kupp-ish, maybe a little smaller version of that. But those are the catches that he'll get.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think, again, depending on sort of, this is probably Lockett's last year with the team. I think Metcalf, we could definitely say he's plateaued as a player. I think JSN is probably going to be like a leap ahead of that at this point. So, really good player. He's definitely one that when I update my dynasty ranks next, I'm going to have like a pretty difficult time, I think, keeping him out of like my top 15 dynasty players, just because he's been that good this in terms of wide receivers, just that good this year. Like, he's definitely passed up this second year has definitely put him kind of back on track into what you would probably have wanted from him if he was a top 5 rookie pick last year in you for all that. So definitely a guy that's on the rise here, but I think we'll be a little bit debated. Let's do one more from your list, and then I'm going to close out with a vanity pick from mine before we get out of here.
I was going to do Anthony Richardson, but like, I mean, come on. I think we don't need to debate that. Just listen to the last 2 months of our podcast. Anything you see on Twitter. I'm going to keep up with receivers though. And this is, for me, it's really just this group. We already talked about Drake London. He's locked in. I don't care who the quarterback is. If they have the same offense coordinator, it's a perfect offense for him. I think Drake London is scheme proof, quarterback proof, just because he's a big bully ball winner that can win inside and outside. Done. Okay. But the rest of his class, I think, is just so interesting. Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, even Jameson Williams a little bit, Christian Watson, George Pickens. I threw in Alec Pierce just for fun, but I already know what Pierce is.
You want to talk Wandale Robinson too, Nate, or what?
Yeah, Wandale kidding. Robinson. Who else is in that class too? I actually, there's another one that just popped into my mind. Who's the guy the Browns drafted? The guy from Purdue, Bell, David Bell.
Yeah, David Bell. I don't even think he's on the team anymore.
Oh my God. He got first round hype for a minute. So London, lock, set, forget. Receiver one as a prospect, still my receiver one from this class. I really love London. But like Garrett Wilson is so interesting to me because he's uber talented. And he is always going to be kind of a loose route runner is how I'll describe him, which can lead to some volatility as far, especially with a quarterback that wants his guys very precise, like Aaron Rodgers. But the guy is just so talented. Yeah. And I just don't know. The Jets are just such a mess and Davante Adams is still there. They might run it back with Rodgers. There's also a lot of whispers right now with Vrabel going to the Jets. Interesting. I also want to drop that right now, but yeah, there's some whispers. But if this is the same setup, it's like, all right, well, what does that make of Garrett Wilson? Like, because obviously him and Rodgers just can't get that pure connection. Like Wilson wants to do some things. He thinks he's open. Rodgers wants him to do other things. If Adams is still there, his role is just still wonky because Adams is automatically going to be the one. So this is more like questions I have even for you, Matt, than more of like a declarative statement because I would say I was lower on Wilson. I thought he was an easy first round pick, a guy you take in the top 20. It was just, I had always hesitations with maybe, you know, is he going to be this consistent guy? And this might not be the best situation for him to earn that consistency. Maybe he does and takes that big leap into year three, but I'm just still kind of like a little confused on maybe how to gauge him for dynasty purposes. So that's why I wanted to bring his name up was him and Olave is just health stuff.
Yeah.
The Saints quarterback stuff.
Oh God.
It's just, yeah, these are just more questions really just for you, Matt, than maybe me making a big statement on them.
I definitely think there's been a production. And I think maybe a little bit of like a talent gap between London and Wilson. And then, man, Olave is so good, but it's like always something, you know, and now with the concussions and just what the future of that team looks like is a little questionable. I think those two guys are still, Olave, I might need to drop into tier three as opposed to tier two where I've had him for a long, long time, just because of some of these concerns and questions with Wilson, man, I don't, my instinct is still, they don't end up running this back with Rodgers and they, especially like you think talking about Vrabel, you think he's going to want to come in there and be like, all right, I'm going to spend the first like two like months of my tenure as this team's head coach, like waiting for
dealing with
that
this
guy to call me back, you know, like, I don't think so. But, and even like, if they're going to bring Adams back, they have to adjust his like disgusting, absurd cap hit, which, again, you get a new coach in there. I feel like it's just going to be kind of a blank slate. And I think these guys like Wilson and Breece Hall probably aren't all that thrilled with how their third seasons went in the NFL, especially when like both those guys had uber productive seasons on the Jets in year two. And I do think Wilson can be the type of guy that a bad quarterback can he was very productive with Zach Wilson, and then it's like, well, get Aaron Rodgers in there, and there just have been a little bit of a weird stylistic fit because of some of the things that you're mentioning. So I actually think that a change here would be good for Wilson, even if it's questionable, like, what is it one of these rookie quarterbacks, are they trading for Kirk Cousins, are they trading for Derek Carr, you know, are they going
to
do
Cousins to the Jets would be so funny.
I've already seen the Photoshops, which like, I mean, log off, go outside if you're Photoshopping.
Oh, you
Kirk
said Carr to the Jets too. Actually, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's actually interesting.
In the chat, Jason said Jameis Winston. That would hit like
Jameis
crack,
in New York.
Yeah. Jameis in New York.
Either New York team.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, him with Malik Nabers, like, and eventually he'll get benched because that's what Jameis does. But either of these guys would be like crazy.
Those
productive
6 weeks will be a hoot.
Yeah. Hey, look at Jerry Jeudy, fourth in the NFL in receiving yards or whatever. Yep. So yeah, I mean, I think that I still have a lot of faith in Wilson. I still think he's a top.
He's so talented.
Top eight dynasty receiver. Somebody I definitely still want on my team for sure.
Marvin Harrison Jr. or Garrett Wilson.
Nice. I literally have those dudes back to back in my ranks, and I was thinking about flipping them and putting Wilson ahead of Harrison, but just because I think he's been a better player so far in the NFL. But obviously, we've got more time with Wilson. Yeah, he's more dynamic. But
it's just that. But there's the two perfect receivers that are they're such different archetypes, and it's kind of like even though Harrison Jr. is big, it's just that he's the clean route runner, that type, and Wilson's just so explosive. So it's just such a funny dichotomy with those two.
All right, last one I want to get to here before we take a break and preview Thursday Night Football. And like, I hesitate to open the Bears can of worms because it is always a can of worms, but I do want to just have a little conversation about Rome Odunze because I think he will be a very hotly debated dynasty player in the offseason. Rest of the season, I'm hoping you don't have to start any Bears. I'm hoping you don't. That would be great. But if you do have to start a Bears receiver, it's probably not Rome. It's probably DJ Moore or DJ Moore. Like you hate yourself and you got to start Keenan Allen, the second half hero, Keenan Allen. But with Rome specifically, I really don't want to go down the whole like the Caleb or the coordinator or the bag, all that stuff. I just want you to talk about like when you've watched Rome specifically, what have you seen and is there anything that's got you concerned about him? Because you and I both really liked him as a prospect. I think I had him as receiver too. I had Harrison, Odunze, and the Neighbors. Right now, I definitely think I would probably rather have Neighbors. He's been in a better situation for production, no question about it. But just he's more explosive, whatever. But then the questions are going to start to come for other people. Like, do we like Brian Thomas more than him now? Definitely from a dynasty perspective, like probably yes. But like Ladd McConkey, like how far is Rome falling down the ranks? And is that his fault? Is there anything you've seen from him? Or is it more just the situation?
A lot of it is situation. So like, you do have to blank that over. And I know that's just a cop-out answer, but it is. And I do want to, I just realized this today, the receiver coach for the Bears, who's now the offensive coordinator because all the changes that have happened, was Keenan Allen's receiver coach with the Chargers. So that explains a lot.
Interesting. Yeah.
That is interesting. The politics of that room make a lot more sense now. So just learned that this morning. I can't believe I missed that this entire year. But yeah, Roman Dunze, I would say I'll start with a negative. Been more mental busts with him. And again, this is why I want to say it might be situation, but how I expected Roman Dunze to be, I thought he was going to be a pro's pro right away. I thought he was going to be super smart, super polished, not make a lot of mistakes, play tough, play hard, all those things. He still plays tough, plays hard, plays fast. I can tell his head's spinning a little bit. I would even bring up a early sack against the Vikings. And I don't know who was at fault here. And that's what's hard because the route concepts were so freaking bad. But that's what's nice. A good offense, I can tell what happened. I can go, oh, okay, this. A bad offense, I'm like,
who knows?
I don't know what the route was supposed to be on there. And, you know, so they're just throwing stuff at the wall. And Keenan Allen runs high on a route. They're both running in breakers. So I'm not sure if Keenan Allen's wrong or Ndunze's wrong, which is a problem. But it just seems like a lot of that where Ndunze might be the one at fault. There was last week against the 49ers, multiple people clipped this, including me. They ran a mesh concept and three guys were all right next to each other. Wasn't sure if that was Cole Kmet or Roman Ndunze. My natural instinct would be, oh, I'm going to defer to the vet, you know, the tight end, and just go like, okay, yeah, you're the vet. He's probably right. I'm not sure what Cole Kmet either.
Yeah.
So again, the issue with all this, but I do think there's been some mental block with him or mental rookie wallness with him, especially again, they were idealistically to me, and I've talked to you about this. I compared him to Chris Godwin. I thought maybe seeing him more of a power slot early on, they've kind of used him in different ways. It's gotten better. I think they've used him a little more in the slot. I think I glanced at it yesterday. In recent weeks, which I think that's what his idealistic view is or version of him is going to be, a kind of a 50-50 player in the slot and outside. Keenan Allen kind of hinders that.
Yeah, right.
But he's still talented at the ball, at the catch point. He's still a good route runner. Like he has such a good body control for a big body. He's still strong too and all those things. And I still think he is a good route runner. Like he has good feel. I just think there's been some mental stuff with him. And maybe this is these Washington receivers, him and Jalen Polk. Like, what the hell is going on? Maybe it was Penix all along. Like, I have to apologize to Penix and say that he actually helped out the receivers. We'll see. But I do think there's been a little bit of that. I think there's some of the I hate to use this word, but the politics of the receiver room.
Oh, totally.
Maybe have hindered a lot of this and not getting his idealistic version his first year. But the talent's still there. I mean, we gushed about that touchdown against the 49ers. Like, that's Ndunze all the way. He caught a screen. against the 49ers, and you see him getting north right away, and the Vikings actually see him getting north, and you see some of that kind of, that's again where those Godwin comparisons come in, how good Godwin is on those little receiver screens and getting north and being a big body in those. So I'm still bullish on him. I just think these circumstances were god awful. I just watched him against the Vikings, and I'm just like, that was so bad. Like, it's pathetic. Can't believe they put that on. It's pathetic. Guys running wrong routes, guys running into each other. Caleb's now looking just like, I don't even know where to look, which compared, he's gotten like, his polish has gotten worse from the first 6 weeks. So it's just, yeah, that's just terrible what you're doing to a rookie quarterback. But yeah, Bauta Ndunze though, still bullish on him. I just think the circumstances have really hindered a clean first year, which I think is stating the obvious with anyone who's paying attention to what's happened in Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I liked Roman Ndunze, like from a fantasy perspective, I had him ranked like right with or right behind like Brian Thomas Jr., you know, like, yeah. And like, that was, to me, that was obvious that he was going to have it. Thomas was going to have at least as good, if not a better rookie year than Ndunze. And I definitely like, whereas Ndunze stuck with these two guys that, like you said, the politics of the room and DJ Moore. And that's so interesting about the interim offensive coordinator and the receiver coach is Keenan Allen's old coach. That is really interesting. like these two guys, like the deck has been less stacked for Thomas as we've gone along the way. Cause Kirk's on IR, Davis on IR, Ingram's on IR now. So, there's no question that like Thomas is more explosive of a guy than Roma Ndunze, but we knew, again, that's something that's not new information. That is something that was known about these two guys. I think it's a fascinating thing I hear you talk about him as a Godwin type, because one thing I've been irritated with is that, like, I think in an ideal world, let's say Keenan Allen's not on the team next year. I mean, he probably won't be, he's on last year of his contract, and they're gonna blow things imagine. It'd be really stunning other than the fact that like he has been the first read on so many concepts, but it's weird. Anyways, let's live in a hypothetical world. Let's live in a hypothetical world where he's not back there. To me, like, I would think that, okay, Rome is kind of the X receiver, and then DJ Moore is our little move around guy, you know, get yards after catch stuff with him and things like that. So that's like the opposite of sort of maybe the usage that you're kind of comparing him as like a Godwin 50-50 type. So I'm interested to see where that usage ends up being. And I think that'll end up kind of telling us, is he a, because I compare him to like an Allen Robinson type X receiver, but Robinson was a guy that I think he moved into the slot like too late.
He moved into a power slot role.
But like too late into his career. So maybe at some point we could see Ndunze kind of doing some of those type of things. But he definitely is a type of receiver that's going to need a lot of volume to thrive, because he's not the most like a Neighbors or Thomas and something like that. And there was just no way he was ever going to get that volume this year. And if you look at like the uncatchable targets and stuff, he's gotten the worst and lowest quality volume of the three receivers.
It's bad. I just watched it too. Watched him against the Vikings. It's bad. It's really bad. And there was one month, I swear to God, one month where it was all coming together for them.
Yep.
It was, and actually before their bye week, and it just is just falling apart since then. But I was a little disappointed in Ndunze early on. I know he was battling injuries, but watching him recently, I'm like, okay. This is kind of what the guy I was expecting. It's just same. That. Yeah. Like you and speaking of Caleb's style, Caleb really does have, and this is how he operated in college, he's going to want quick game and want shorter throws and shorter, more control throws from the spread looks. That's going to work great with Ndunze.
Yeah.
Because down the road, once they kind of trim the fat of the rest of the skill position guys. So I will say there's a great stylistic fit between those two.
Yeah, definitely someone I'm still holding out hope for, and I will probably still keep in my second tier of dynasty receivers. All right, let's take our final break here. When we come back, we'll preview Thursday Night Football right after this. All right, we're back. Thursday Night Preview. Big game here. Broncos at Chargers. Chargers are 2.5-point home favorites. 42-point over under here, Nate Tice. These are 42 points. I could see this game being like 17-10 with the way these two offenses play, two defenses that have been, I know the Chargers got taken to task by Baker Mayfield, but they've been a good defense on balance this season. The Denver Broncos, obviously one of the best defenses in the NFL. You've talked a lot about that. So, how do we see this game playing? Let's start with when the Broncos have the ball. How do we see this game playing out?
They're going to try and make it tough on Knicks. Like, they're going to do a lot of squeezing and coverage, probably some funky looks. I'm really excited to actually watch this pass rush against this pass protection. As far as the Broncos are really good in pass pro, as far as passing things off, Chargers do more twist games
stunts than anybody else. So that's a really fun kind of stylistic fit there, or stylistic matchup there. I will say that the Chargers, because they are so keyed in on game planning and so keyed on matching routes and everything, susceptible to quarterback runs. And Bo Nix, when he's quick to run it when he thinks it's muddy. So look for that. So my first one, putting my first pin out there, over 20 and a half rushing yards for Bo Nix. Higher number than I was hoping for. I was hoping maybe that 15 and a half, 14 and a half, something. But they're privy to Nix's rushing ability. But I still am going to take it because I do. The Chargers are 24th in scramble EPA per allowed, or EPA allowed. And I think Nix is going to have some opportunities there on passing downs when he's like, all right, first read's gone. Boom, I'm going to tuck it and run it. I think there'll be some good chances for him there. So I think really that it's, God, you have to just be so disciplined against this Chargers team. They don't really have the horses. And that's what's funny is the Broncos offense is kind of the same way. They don't have all the horses. The offensive line's pretty good, but they're disciplined. They do a lot of good things. So it's kind of, I think it's going to be really fun as far as soundness on this side of the ball. But that's the first angle I see is Nix running the ball a little bit against this Chargers defense.
Yeah, I had a really tough time thinking about like the angles for this game because – I mean, Cortland Sutton, obviously, it was pretty messy game for him, just in terms of drops in Week 15. But he's been so good on balance this year, and he still came away with a touchdown. Like Devon Vele, again, still sub 70% of the routes, zero catches on one target. Like it's just, I have a tough time with the receiver core. Obviously, I think Vele is interesting, and Sutton's had a great season this year. But you typically think of the Sutton stuff. You know, this team plays a lot of two high safeties with the Chargers. They play a lot of zone coverage. I do think Nix throwing to Sutton over the middle of the field, like that was maybe an angle I wanted to explore. It's like the over under is, I think, 63.5 in terms of Cortland Sutton receiving yards. I feel like Sutton has to have a big game for the Broncos to kind of hang in this one.
Yeah, no, he does. Yeah, Vailey's dead. Okay. Well, Vailey 2.5 receptions is interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. He had zero last week, but
zero, I know. But again, you got to look at, you know, how the Colts want to run stuff, so much single high, and that's going to take some stuff over the middle. You know, it's going to be more outside attacking oriented. I know there's a couple throws over the middle and everything. So maybe with the Chargers being more six and quarters and soft zone looks, maybe that's opens up stuff for the middle. So actually the Vele angle is not terrible, or looking over the middle stuff. So yeah,
better odds on 30.5 receiving yards for him than receptions, which is receptions. You know, -155.
Vele too, underlying stats pretty dang good. A higher success rate per out than Jaden Reed, Jerry Jeudy, Mooney, Jordan Addison, Harrison Jr., Waddle, Christian Watson, Michael Pittman, Amari Cooper, DK Metcalf. You know, he is
interesting. Just the fact that he's turning 27 this month, and you know all that is very he is a bizarre profile for sure. But
he really is.
I do like him. I think he's interesting. And yeah, I mean, team high 2.21 yards per route run against zone coverage for Devon Vele. Ooh. So maybe we do the over 30.5.
Vele just better odds.
Yeah, yeah,
and 30.5 receiving yards.
Let's do it.
I'm all for that. Yeah, I like that one. Marvin Mims, that's, I don't know, it's all boom bust with Mims.
Yeah, gotcha.
So that's too hard. Unless he had a rushing yard. But no, that one's a little tough. And then running the ball, the Broncos are a three-headed monster, depending on how Sean Payton wakes up that day, like who he wants to give the rock to. So yeah, like it's hard for me to go with Williams or any of the or Estime or McKinley or anything like
McLaughlin's that. McLaughlin's so, hurt I'm, too. So I or mean, McLaughlin, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's a tough one too. Maybe it narrows down the backfield, but in fantasy, you should not be starting a Denver Broncos running back. If your team has made it this far, you can't possibly have been relying on a Denver Broncos running back. So
it's too hard.
I do think from a pass game standpoint, like this is a pretty interesting matchup for Nix. It's pretty I think Sutton's a good start in this one. The Vele stuff is pretty interesting in terms of him working against the Chargers zone coverage. What about when the Chargers have the ball here, Nate? This is a really That's interesting tough. One to consider. Patrick Surtain banged up coming into this game. I don't know if we know at this point whether he's going to play in this contest or not, but he did have an injury late in the game. And even still, like Ladd McConkey typically is a slot receiver. That's the biggest pass catcher of concern here for the Chargers. You would think he'd avoid Surtain for the most part anyways.
Yeah. Surtain, full participant practice. So looks like he is playing. No, and then Riley Moss did not participate Monday and was limited on Tuesday. Not that's really like hindered this Broncos defense at all. I would be a little bearish on Ladd because they're going to have Surtain match and get follow him around the formation.
So you think even in like the slot and stuff like that?
Yeah, they'll do it against certain guys. Like he, a couple of weeks ago, was lining up in the slot again. So now I'm blanking on who the team was, but no, they'll do it. It just depends. And it's also a man zone tell, and you'll see smarter offenses figure that out and kind of like move a guy and then see where Surtain goes and everything. But they'll do it if they think that guy's a threat. More on passing downs, like third down and second and long and everything. So that's why I'm like a little scared of Ladd, because then even if it's not Surtain, if Riley Moss is playing, he's good too. So that's another thing. And then they have other corners out there as well. So it's maybe looking at the auxiliary receivers for the Chargers. Like Joshua Palmer is over 2.5 receptions. Are we just going number 3 receivers on both sides of the ball? That's maybe one. You can maybe get with the tight ends. Against this Broncos defense, that is something they've been susceptible to.
Stone Smart then, over 37.5 receiving yards. I mean, Stone Smart
37.5.
Yeah.
Oh, that was gonna be a little lower, but that's also like how you attack this Broncos team is you try to attack the slot, which could be Ladd, but then they might move Surtain in the slot. So that's it depends on the Broncos game plan for this week, and that's why I think it's gonna be hard to kind of like really hang my hat on any of them.
I like the Stone. I mean, just from a betting perspective, I like the Stone Smart call out because ran a route on 56.8% of the dropbacks. He got 6 targets. Like he played a lot with Will Disley out of the picture last week. So I like Stone Smart from a betting perspective. Definitely from a like fantasy perspective, you're starting Ladd. It's just, I mean, we're talking about 6.5 catches. We're talking about 66.5 receiving yards. That's obviously risky with the Surtain effect, but we saw it with Judy too. I mean, in this Broncos matchup pretty recently that you just need a few plays away from him if you're a really good receiver and you can, but Riley Moss obviously wasn't playing in that game either, so that's been a complicating factor.
That's a math changer. I know, that's the thing. It's usually it's like, oh, they have one good corner, just throw it to the other guy, and then it's like when Riley Moss is playing, it's like, oh, okay, all right, where to go here? I don't know exactly where to line up there. Maybe let's just go with Smart. Kind of like that.
Do we just take the under on Justin Herbert 232.5 passing yards? Yeah, that's
so.
What we're doing too.
Yeah, I think so too.
I really think we also just might want to take the under in this game. I don't know that there's going to be a lot of points in this one.
Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of a higher than I was expecting too. I know it's a short week and it's kind of volatile with that, but yeah, I think there's more unders that I like in this game than overs. I was trying to look up how much Surtain's been in the slot this year. Good old next gen stats.
I don't think it's been that much. Like, I really think there hasn't been that many opportunities for him inside.
There's just one game, and maybe that's why it's doing that so much in my head about it. I've never actually even looked at what his numbers are. Please just give it. Oh, there he is. It's only 5%. 41 snaps in the slot. Yeah, and they all came in games where he's manned up. So it's all matchup based. So if they think Ladd is worthy of that, then he goes there. If they don't, so maybe you're just hoping that Ladd is just flies under the radar for them. But I don't know. If you watch one game of Ladd, I don't think he'll fly under anybody's radar about how his ability is.
Well, I like these four bets here. The Bonix rushing yards, the Vele stack, the Stone Smart 37.5 receiving yards, and then the Justin Herbert under 232.5 passing yards. I feel pretty good about that. And this is definitely a very clean cut game in fantasy. You should not be trying to like, how can I squeeze Quentin Johnston in here or whatever. I mean, this is like if you got Ladd McConkey, you're probably going to have to play him. Maybe you have some better options, but I think you probably have to play him. And honestly, like, Cortland Sutton, if you've been riding with that.
Yeah.
Bo Nix, Herbert are probably like QB2 super flex types, but really that's it in this matchup.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you kind of nailed it right there. Yeah. I think Sutton, you just want a red zone touchdown is going to be everything for him. It's going to be a couple chunk plays. That's kind of how the performance will be.
All right. Well, that is going to do it, Nate, for the final edition of the Fantasy Film Room of the regular season. Tell the people what you're working on that they can check out this week.
Writing about the Vikings and Packers. and how I think they're contenders, which I mean, the Vikings got double digit wins already. I don't think I'm crazy in saying this, but more just news with the Lions, maybe taking a drop back, maybe opening up the division, the conference. And I also just my bullish feelings, because we're just saying bull and bear throughout the show, my bullish feelings on the Packers and Vikings. So writing that this week on Yahoo.
Love it. Well, definitely make sure everybody checks that out. These are two super fascinating teams to honestly consider, man, as we head towards the NFL playoffs. And I cannot wait to get there. Cannot wait for a lot of exciting things to be on the horizon. In the meantime, tomorrow, Friday, Andy Behrens and Tara Roberts will join me, as they always do, to preview all of Sunday's Week 16 action. Until then, we are out.